Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Thursday edition of the Three Martini Lunch. Andrew Johnson of National Review is in for Jim Garrity today. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Good, bad, and crazy martinis for you today, as usual. And, Andrew, we start with the good. The good news, first of all, seems to be that there was no controversy whatsoever in the Republican Senate leadership elections for the incoming majority. By acclamation, Mitch McConnell and John Cornyn elected majority leader and majority whip. But the one we really want to get to here is that the Democrats are also holding their leadership elections. And despite the shellacking the Democrats took and in the wake of the Senate Democrats really doing nothing over the past 2 years because Harry Reid wanted to protect his members from difficult votes, that worked out well for them. He is now apparently in pretty good shape to hang on to the job despite all that negativity. But he does have one person who's not ready to vote for him. That's Senator Claire McCaskill of Missouri. According to Roll Call, she told reporters Thursday she would not vote for Senator Harry Reid as the Democratic leader as the party heads into the minority. Quote, I will not, unquote, she responded when asked whether she will vote for the Nevada Democrat. So still doesn't seem to be anybody else sticking their neck out there to challenge Reid. But once again, the finger pointing seems to keep going here, and we'll take it as long as that lasts.
No one has stepped forward to challenge him, so it might just sort of be an empty threat by Claire McCaskill. But it does show that, again, Harry Reid and by further extension, President Obama are still toxic for a lot of these Democrats, even after the election. They're not happy with them. They don't want to be associated with them, at least at a very minimum, that they're saying that. And in another article, I think it was Politico, I was reading that Joe Manchin didn't give as forceful a rejection of Harry Reid as McCaskill did. He said he's open to change. We need to find a new way of doing business here in the Senate. Even Jeanne Shaheen sort of gave a similar response that she was open to hearing who else was jumping in, what some other ideas were as far as who leadership was. But as we said a few days ago, grab the popcorn and start watching, because the Democrats are going after one another. And while Republicans are sort of unanimously going around Mitch McConnell. And what's funny is, you know, leading up to all this, the narratives were always, oh, if Republicans get control, then that means there's going to be a Tea Party challenger to Mitch McConnell. And, oh, there's, you know, division, the schism, all this stuff in the Republican Party will further manifest itself. And who knows what will happen? We'll have weirded weather and Cory Gardner will ban condoms and all this stuff. But no, Republicans are going about doing their business. They're sort of all doing what they need to do. While, you know, Democrats are the ones that are finding themselves unsure what the next step is.
Well, we're more than a week now, of course, after the midterm elections, and the news just doesn't get any better for Democrats, and particularly the White House, as we move to martini number two. We played you the clip from Jonathan Gruber earlier in the week from his talk at the University of Pennsylvania last year, where he said the stupidity of the American voter made it really easy to not have much transparency in the bill. Yes, the mandate was a tax. Yes, young, healthy people are essentially paying for the health care for older, less healthy people. There's new videos out now saying that basically the inability of the American people to understand economics well really helped to get this passed as well. And you had Josh Earnest over in Asia saying, oh, that's just not even true. Not only should he not have said that, it's not true. But the weird part here, and is the bad martini, Andrew, is that the American media, they really have no interest in dissecting what Gruber was saying or why he and perhaps others in the administration look so negatively and with so much disdain on the American people. Instead, they're foaming at the mouth over Republican criticism of the Obamacare architect, calling the American people stupid and admitting without any hint of blushing that they essentially lied to get this thing passed. Josh Barrow over at the New York Times and MSNBC says, Jonathan Gruber was right. Public opinion on health care policy is just completely incoherent. It puts politicians in a position where the only thing they can do to make the public happy is lie, and so people lied. The Washington Post headline today is Stupidity Comments Renew GOP Vitriol on Obamacare. So, Andrew, the real problem here is that the Republicans just still hate Obamacare, not that the people who passed it lied to you and think you're stupid.
Yeah, two things. The first is, as this article shows, the number of why Jonathan Gruber was right, or those sorts of stories in that same vein over these past couple of days has kind of been startling. You could expect some, but every once in a while, I feel like couple hours on Twitter, I see the latest Gruber was on to something, and you know, and they try and rationalize and explain why that was. And the other thing is, he didn't just say this one time, as other videos showed. It wasn't just that he called them stupid because he got all worked up at this one University of Pennsylvania academic conference, I guess it was. But he said it at least one or two other times, I believe, as more videos have come out. So this was a clear approach that I guess they had towards this law, and people are already rallying around it. Nancy Pelosi had her press conference today, and someone asked her about this, and she said she doesn't know who Jonathan Gruber is. She knows multiple Grubers, I think, was her quote. So she couldn't place it, and that, you know, he didn't write this law. And then I actually have a press release in front of me from December 1st, 2009, from then Speaker Pelosi, in which she is citing MIT healthcare economist Jonathan Gruber and his conclusions about why this bill is so important. So will the media call her out on this, or will, again, they recognize that, again, it's the American people's fault, that they had to be hoodwinked. It was for their own good that they had to be, you know, misled.
She knows three Grubers. Doesn't that remind you of Jay Carney after Hillary Rosen said that Ann Romney never worked a day in her life, and they said, oh, wow, look, Hillary Rosen's been to the White House a lot in this administration. So clearly they're ideological soulmates. And his response was, I don't know which Hillary Rosen that was. I happen to know three of them. So it could have been any of them.
A lot of people on the left just must have similar names. So, you know. Yeah, I guess I shouldn't say that as an Andrew Johnson. But
Well, you're named after one of America's most distinguished presidents, clearly.
Yeah, distinguished is one way of putting it.
All right, on to the crazy martini now. And obviously, with a lot of Republican gains, there are some Democrats leaving office, some because they lost and some just because their time is up because they've already served a couple of terms. And that's the case for Arkansas Democratic Governor Mike Beebe. But that's not the story here. This is from The Washington Post. Arkansas Governor Mike Beebe plans to pardon his son over an 11-year marijuana conviction, according to a local report. Beebe's son Kyle was arrested in 2003 by police responding to a call from his then-girlfriend, who alleged he shoved her. After entering the house, they discovered more than an ounce of marijuana in a plastic bag, according to a March 29, 2003 Arkansas Democrat Gazette article. At the time, his father said his son deserved equal treatment. He says, obviously, his mother and I are heartbroken like any parent would be, and he needs to be treated like everybody else, no better, no worse. When asked about those comments now by KATV, Governor Beebe says he stands by them and that Kyle Beebe applied for a pardon like anyone else. He was one of 17 applications, I guess, to be pardoned to have been deemed to have merit. And he now says if they get straightened up to get their life back on track and have a second chance, this should be no different. And so, Andrew, obviously it's been 11 years. It's a good chance his son has turned his life around and maybe he is genuinely worthy of parole, but this just looks really, really bad.
I know sometimes we it could get a little tedious, though. Or imagine if this was a Republican. Imagine if, you know, an outgoing Governor Romney in Massachusetts had pardoned one of his sons for something, how that would look. And that's sort of just the thing that makes it a little crazy, that makes it a crazy martini. It's not that he didn't go through the process. I mean, again, I guess he did it like everybody else. Although I wonder if, like everybody else, he had a chance to talk. He didn't bring it up with his dad before. Like, by the way, Dad, I'm going to be applying for a pardon with you. Or if it just kind of came across the governor's desk and he realized, oh, it's my son. That's great. So I think that's probably different from a lot of other people that apply for a pardon. But hey, it helps to have friends in high places, or I guess a father in a high place. I guess that's Governor Beebe's prerogative.
Asa Hutchinson, glad to see you coming in to take that job here in the next few weeks, and hopefully you won't have to deal with that sort of situation. But we should point out that the pardon thing goes both ways. Remember Haley Barbour pardoning the murderers because he did a good job cutting his grass at the governor's mansion?
Oh, man, I don't know. I didn't know about that one, but
yeah,
that's pretty funny.
Yeah, he left office under a little bit of a cloud for that situation. But the latest one's from an outgoing Democrat in Arkansas. Andrew, have a good day. Talk to you later.
Yeah, you too. Take it easy.
Andrew Johnson of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today. And be sure to join us again on Friday for the next Three Martini Lunch.